I live in Africa. I see these diseases every day, and someone from UK coming to tell me something which is in my country. You know, it's like someone outside your home come and tell you what's happening in your house. It was a bit not good.
Esther Majaliwa is a doctor from Tanzania. For years, medical research in Africa has been performed in large by international doctors rather than African doctors such as Esther. In this programme, we'll address why this might be a problem and the barriers faced by East African doctors like Esther getting into academic medicine. As a young doctor on a new postgraduate course in East Africa, I had the opportunity to find out from the East Africans themselves what they thought. My first stop was London. I travelled to the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine to find out what problems international doctors face when doing research in Africa. Dr. Phil Gothard, Senior Lecturer in Tropical Medicine, explains more.
I mean, there are lots of problems. The first thing is defining the right question. And you know, this is someone else's country with someone else's problems. And so you need to find out what the questions are to answer. You know, if you visit someone else's country for the first time, the problems you see may not be the ones that really exist. And so I think having a deep knowledge and asking people locally, you know, what they feel the problems are. And that just takes time and relationship and you know, opportunities to discuss.
Besides the challenges faced by internationals, I wondered if there was any harm that can be done by international doctors flying in to do research.
You can also do harm by coming in with a very strong externally led agenda that doesn't really take into account the needs of local people. And it's, you know, it's quite tricky. Imagine someone comes with £1 million and says, I'd like to do this exciting study. And you're sitting there, you know, on a wage of £100 a month. You're going to say, well, great, there might be something in this for me, adding a salary or something interesting to gain or some further education or something better for the hospital or, you know, an outcome for the patients. There might be something in it for me in a wide sense. And so you might be more willing to accept someone else's imposed idea because they're economically strong.
I spoke to Professor David Mabey, who spent much of his career doing research in Africa and experienced firsthand some examples of ethically questionable studies.
You know, there have been examples over the years, and I was a victim of one myself once when I was working at the MRC unit in the Gambia, and I, with my Gambian colleagues, had set up an STI clinic. We had a lot of serum samples that we'd taken from the patients over the years, and then HIV-2 was discovered, and a very senior American colleague asked whether I had any sera from my Gambian STI patients that could be tested. And so I went through the ethical approval and so on and sent these sera to this senior colleague. And the next thing I heard a couple of months later, the Minister of Health in the Gambia had complained to my boss and said, what is all this talk of there being a new kind of HIV in the Gambia? And this was the first I'd heard of the results. So they had been presented at an international conference by actually an American colleague that I'd never met, that they'd been passed on to. So that, I think, is an example of a very bad way to do research.
Local doctors seem to be in a much better position to identify and solve the problems regarding healthcare in Africa. Indeed, the world of international development is moving further away from a model of importing talent to Africa and further towards a model that supports the talent within. Dr. Phil Gothard echoes this growing trend.
The solutions will come from within. And there's a growing generation of university-educated students now, and the opportunity to really build postgraduate skills that will allow African doctors to identify and solve their own problems.
I needed to talk to the African doctors and learn about their views. My next stop was East Africa, where I had the opportunity to talk to some of the doctors living and working there. Dr. Kenneth Luzinda is a doctor at Mulago Hospital in Kampala, the capital of Uganda. He told me about the barriers faced by East African doctors getting into the world of academic medicine and research.
The greatest challenge has mainly been ignorance about opportunities. For example, my university provides PhDs, but no one really knows exactly how to acquire these PhDs, where to go, and how to get the funding. So the knowledge is scant, even the interesting topics. How do I go about it? That's challenge number one. Challenge number two has definitely been mainly writing skills. These things require very specific writing, like writing a PhD proposal, writing a grant. And we do not have that training here. Usually we just go through clinical medicine, and usually that's it. And then definitely the last aspect would be financing. Many times you'll get tuition and not the research money, or the other way around.
Dr. Abdallah Amir is also a doctor in Uganda, but works in Mbarara in the southwest. He told me that getting into academic medicine usually requires further training abroad.
If you want to be an academic doctor, if you want to enter the research or academic world, there are not many options, not many training institutions that will give you the best exposure and training that you need. Most of the people who I've seen are successful in the academic world in Uganda have trained from outside of this country. Not to say that those who have trained from around Africa are not that successful, but I mean, the exposure they get from outside helps them a lot when they come down here. So even that person who has the interest doesn't know what to do or where to go or how to get there.
Travelling abroad for further education is often unrealistic for many of the doctors on an East African wage. However, 3 years ago, the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine started running their diploma in East Africa. I asked Dr. Phil Gothard what the rationale was for moving the course to Tanzania and Uganda.
It's madness to run a course about tropical medicine in London. If you look at the evolution of the diploma in tropical medicine and hygiene, it was started in London and in Liverpool over a century ago. And its main purpose was to provide good quality training for colonial medical officers to support the interests of the empire overseas. And over time, you know, as Britain has pulled back its interest in the Commonwealth, it's become a course that's enabled young doctors, predominantly but not always, to make their first steps in international health and to make personal decisions about whether they're going to go and work in the tropics and whether they're going to do research or development work or work for perhaps an NGO. The other thing is that the London course has a few scholarships for students from poor countries, but not many. Whereas the East African course is deliberately set up to fund a third of the places for East African doctors. And when we initially designed the course, we thought it was important to try and help skill East African doctors through that way. But actually, one of the big impacts is that the international students just love learning with their East African colleagues. The relationships that creates on the course, I think, are its strongest part. Because you spend 3 months in each other's pocket, and at the end of that, you've made friends, and hopefully some of those friendships become professional relationships.
It sounded brilliant, but Phil is director of the course, so I thought I'd better find out from some of the students what they thought. Dr. Naima Minja is a doctor from Tanzania and one of the doctors on this year's course.
Immediately from the first week of the course, I realised that the calibre of the people teaching us in the course, of the lecturers, the material was so different from what I was used to. And all of a sudden, it's almost like my world was opened and there were so many options which I didn't think about before. So definitely from an academic point of view, this course has done so much for East Africans, definitely for myself, I can speak, you know, in terms of expanding my options and my academic career and the way I think.
Her enthusiasm about empowering the locals was obvious.
So one of the key points I'd like to see is, like, when people come in, they should focus also on empowering locals to do the same thing. That's why I think courses like this are fantastic, because, you know, the local doctors are empowered and go on to make a difference as well. Because we're here, we're permanent residents, as opposed to someone coming in, they will eventually leave, you know what I mean? So
I got the impression that the East African doctors were being exposed to new styles of teaching on the diploma. I asked Dr. Kenneth about the teaching styles he had experienced in the past.
It's usually a tense environment where the junior, who is a student, will just listen and keep quiet and sometimes even be fearful to ask a question unless it's really important. Yet in the lectures that we are having, I ask things as many times as I want, which I usually wouldn't do. I find that very relaxing during the lectures.
Dr. Ronald Mbwasi is a doctor from Moshi in Tanzania. He was also trained using the more traditional didactic approach, but was quick to see the benefits of an alternative teaching style and incorporate it into his practice.
Initially, like from where I studied, we've always had like very serious lectures. Yeah, you'd have a bunch of slides with information that is relevant to the topic, and that is it. A lecturer will give you examples which are very serious, and it was a pretty serious lecture. You know, nobody jokes around or smiles during most of it. But coming on this course, I kind of thought it would be the same, but I think for me it's been a great learning experience. For example, just on our first days of introduction, when Philip Gothard started introducing himself and the course, it was so nice that he gave you the relevant information, but at the same time, he put in, like, you know, pictures that were kind of funny, you know, about himself or friends, you know, in interesting places. And it kind of lightens the mood and brings you, always brings you back, even if maybe you're tired, but it always keeps you on point. And I think that's been the trend generally through most of the lectures that we've received from most of the facilitators. And I think it's been amazing because I think you've seen some of the presentations I've made, and I've kind of tried to also kind of incorporate some fun stuff to make it a bit more exciting rather than just giving somebody a very serious lecture.
The course brought together doctors from all around the world and I was keen to find out from the East Africans what they thought about this. I was touched by Ronald's honesty regarding the prejudices he had about working with the international doctors.
We all have our prejudices, yeah? And I admit I had mine, even though I always tell people that you shouldn't do that and you shouldn't stereotype people. But really, when I was coming to the course, I really thought, you know, it's going to be a bunch of foreigners that are going to be, you know, minimally interesting, and we're going to be very different opinions, ideals, and everything, and the ideas. But I think my first shock, so to say, was actually when the first day when I walked in. Because when I came in, I found 50 plus people, 50 very loud people. Everybody was talking and laughing and hugging. And so my assumption was that all you guys knew each other. Everyone's like, oh, wow, these guys are all from the same place. They must have known each other for months. But apparently, it was just the last 2 days when people had arrived when they got to know each other well. And from then on, I think you guys have broken every preconceived idea I had about foreigners.
The breaking down of preconceived ideas was a common theme. Amir echoes this sentiment, and we hear the first mention of the word collaboration.
Coming into this course with all these multicultural backgrounds that we had, it was difficult to predict how things would go on. So in the beginning, you had to give a laid-back approach and let things roll and first see how things go on. But by the first week, second week, we were all clicking together and we were all doing things together, there was no sign of difference at all in this group. It was big, big. And I'm looking forward to having more and more collaborations and friendships with my classmates, because it was really interesting. Hopefully a number of them will come and visit in Barra in the future.
Kenneth was very eloquent in summing up the different skill sets that the international and East African doctors bring to the table and the power of those skills in combination.
I really enjoyed seeing people who come from resource-rich settings and their views, and partly their lack of actual knowledge about what exactly goes on in Africa. It's interesting to see that they have different aspects and approaches, and also getting to know what knowledge they have, which is really kind of advanced. And they've been very friendly and helpful, which I didn't know. I really thought they would just come in here, study a few things and go back. But it's been very helpful. I hope they could keep in touch and make more contacts, because their university is actually more advanced, more likely to sponsor research, and we're more likely actually to work together because we know where the diseases are. They probably know how to get funding and how to write projects and how to, you know, utilize other advanced techniques in management and investigations.
The East African doctors were obviously having a good time on the course, but I wanted to find out a bit more about their work lives, where they came from. Naima told me about the conditions faced by doctors in Tanzania.
I know for sure, like in the environment that I work in Tanzania, is that people are very demotivated, I have to say. And because a lot of the time I know the salaries, you know, the working conditions, they're, you know, substandard. And in the end, you're almost like trying to survive.
After a few years as a junior, doctors are expected to go on to do their specialist training, the equivalent of registrar training in the UK, which is called an M.Med. I couldn't believe what Naima told me.
When you're training for your M.Med program, unless you are employed already, you don't get paid. That's the basic line. So I have some colleagues who have not been employed. And employment means that if you're employed in your home area or in the city you come from.
Ronald is one of those in Tanzania who falls into this category.
I have been unfortunate enough not to, I wasn't able to get this, the government sponsorship. Yeah, and currently still in process, but I also haven't yet to be employed by the hospital. So essentially I'm kind of, in a way, working for free, because as part of my program, I still have to work full time. Yeah, but I only get paid for doing calls, which is in the evenings. But other than that, I don't get paid. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's pretty frustrating. I mean, you can imagine, but I'm 32 years old and no salary, you depend on your parents for an allowance, which is terrible really, but what can you do? I mean, I think doing this master's is a means to an end, and yeah, so I'm just gonna, struggle through.
In Uganda, I'd heard a great deal about the problems of doctors migrating away from the country. I spoke to Dr. Kenneth about the working conditions there.
I've worked for 5 years. I'm paid $300 per month. I work up to 16 to 20 hours a day. A colleague in Botswana would probably get 5, 10, I don't know how many times that money. That alone might be an incentive for me to leave. But also, I work in a ward where there is no gloves, there's no antibiotics, there is basically nothing sometimes, and you just have to see the patient go through all the stages of life. You could do that for a year. After 2 years, you don't like it. After 3 years, an opportunity comes and you have to leave.
Amir is also from Uganda. He runs a pharmacy to supplement his wage because working hard as a medical doctor only just pays the bills.
I think the biggest thing that drives people going outside of this country is money and the low pay that is here. So I earn $300, which is $900,000 per month. Half of that goes to my rent, where I live with my wife and child. The other half, I'm supposed to feed my family, take care of my siblings back home, pay school fees here and there. It therefore means that I have to do some other extra work for me to be comfortable where I am.
All the doctors I spoke to recounted stories of poor working conditions, and all were excited about the new international relationships that they were making on the DTMH course. Despite its intended goals of capacity building and sustainability, I wondered whether the course could actually be providing East African doctors with the opportunity to leave Africa and work abroad.
Before this, I always thought I would be best in Uganda because it's really, it's home. And I thought I would find lots of opportunities. But with my relationship with the DTMH, it's opened up lots of options. I could still do these researches in Uganda, the PhDs. But now I see there's lots of many interesting places in Africa that I'm likely to go to and find it easier to do the research there. So it could be either way. It could be that I might train here and stay and do research in my country. But there's a high chance because my country's pay and opportunities are really dire. And yet I might see that Southern Africa country like Botswana or Namibia is actually more likely to pay me better. And since I have a DTMH training, I might be better positioned to end up in such a country.
I asked Naima whether she's more likely to leave Tanzania having done the course.
It's a difficult one because I'm thinking of, being more patriotic and, staying and helping the people needed. But I'm thinking of my development as well. And I want world class, I want to be just as good as someone else who's done so much research. And I think I can get that if I go outside. So, for example, for my master's, I would really like to go outside and get trained and maybe work a little bit, have an income so that I can come back and support, people in my country.
Without wanting to trip her up, I asked her what proportion of those who say they will come back after further training actually do so.
I can tell you the majority don't. And the reasons for that is what we've just discussed. They find that there's so much to do outside, and they get more training and they get more money, and they just feel more competent, that coming back is very difficult for a lot. And what you end up finding is many people go and come back when they're much older and then continue practicing maybe in a private setting.
I caught up with Phil Gothard again, director of the course, and asked him whether there was potential that the course he runs in East Africa could cause more harm than good.
Oh, Jack, well, that's a big question, and one that we do think about. You can't stop people travelling to change their circumstances. What I hope we can do is to channel their learning in a way that will help them develop them personally, and perhaps understand that if they're passionate about their subject and go away and get some higher skills, they can then go back and apply that knowledge locally. But time remains to be seen, really. I think only 10 years will tell us whether that's the case. I think it would be wrong to expect people not to leave home, and because the whole thing about education is that traveling elsewhere broadens your mind, and so I'd hope that people would go overseas for further training. It's whether they come back and apply that. And the school, I think, it behoves us really to try and support that long term somehow.
Indeed, it was great to hear that for some of the East Africans, the course had further inspired them to stay. Dr. Amir again.
My being on this course did not in any way change what I feel about Mbarara and how I want to stay and work in Mbarara. My diploma, when I came to the course, I came to get a course and go back to Mbarara and work, not to get a paper that will lead me out of this country. I must say that for me, speaking to a few people on this course, both tutors and students, makes me even feel more about wanting to stay in Africa.
You hear a lot of talk in the development literature about empowering locals and supporting local talent in Africa. Sometimes it feels like rhetoric, but here was a specific example, albeit a small example, of an institution supporting healthcare in Africa by supporting African doctors. I think I could conclude that the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine had achieved what it set out to do, inspire and empower East African doctors to take up a career in academic medicine. Dr. Esther Majaliwa, from whom we heard at the beginning, sums it up nicely for us.
So this is a wake-up call for me. I know, like, one of the things which really, really has been touching my heart is about research and how important it is for us to do research. It was a bit odd, like, I live in Africa, I see these diseases every day, and someone from UK coming to tell me something which is in my country. You know, it's like someone outside your home come and tell you what's happening in your house. It was a bit not good. So, I realized that there is a very big need of local doctors doing research and also encouraging medical students in that field as well. So that is one of the biggest messages I'm taking back home.
I'd been struck by the powerful bonds that had formed between the East African doctors and their classmates from around the world. Dr. Keir Philip, talking on behalf of the international doctors, shared his views on working with his new East African friends in the future.
I would really value working with them because I really value their approach to medicine, and their opinions and their drive. And in terms of working with a team or working with people in the future who are productive and passionate and really working because it's what they believe in, those are the people that I found there. So those are people that I would want to carry on working with, because they, you know, they get me going. They really are enthusiastic and it's refreshing, you know.
And he wasn't just all talk either. Keir and his classmates were so inspired by the East Africans that they raised enough money to create another scholarship for an East African doctor on next year's course.
So right from the beginning of the course, it was clear that having the East Africans on the course was really beneficial for the learning of everyone on the course. And it would really contribute, much more importantly, to East Africa in the future. It was also apparent that Burundi was a country in East Africa that hadn't been represented on the course. And this was something which we wanted to help address. So what we did is we got together and we fundraised the £8,500 that was required for a scholarship for a student from Burundi to come on the course next year.
Back in London, I asked Phil Gothard, course director and co-founder of the course, about how he feels at the end of the diploma each year. It seems that despite all the science and all the academia, it's watching the relationships flourish that he finds most inspiring.
I'm tearful at the end of the course. The emotion is from that that sense of equality and sharing. And that, because whatever you say, Northern doctors do seem extremely privileged. And within their own societies, African doctors are privileged. But you put them together on the same stage as international doctors who are wealthy, often privileged from their own backgrounds, have freedom to travel, may have had a whole experience that's different to the local. And you might think these guys are, that there's inequality. But after a while, it becomes very clear. They're just different people with different experiences. And at the end of the, actually partway through the course, you begin to see that. And it's just wonderful when that opens up. So I think if anything, we're saying to people, well, look, you're all just different, but you're the same. You're equal. And it's up to you to make what you want out of it.